Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump in.
Well, hello, everybody. Bill's on his way. Should be here. Talked to him earlier. Said a couple things to do and take his wife somewhere, so he should be here. But while I'm waiting for the other guest to call, I'm going to play, I got a request again to play Rusty's interview. So I'll play that now, and then I'll be right back.
I'd like you to take people back to where Attica 7 started. You know, realizing for the first time that you may never see daylight again. Yeah. And what your emotions were like when you were putting these songs down on paper, and how you got that inspiration. Okay?
Yeah, visualize yourself in a cell, 6x8, 8x12, whatever it is. You've just been ripped out of society with a possibility of never having a chance to ever see your family again outside of a cell somewhere or a visiting area in a prison while you're either shackled behind glass or under guard. And you're not expecting any of this to happen. It just happens. And all of a sudden, everything you've held dear, everything that you love is out of your reach. You know, it changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you think about what you do. Instead of just going out randomly and doing what you feel like doing, it makes you think before you do those things with those large consequences. And when you're in a motorcycle club, you're going to pay twice the consequence, maybe three times, maybe four times of what the average person is going to pay for any action that you may take, or even a reaction to being attacked yourself. You become not the victim, but the perpetrator defending yourself because you're in a motorcycle club. So you have to think about all these things every day. It's like walking on the edge of a razor blade. And when you're doing your time, it's like walking on the edge of a razor blade the whole time you're in, because you don't want to lose your good time, but you can't be weak. So you have to do whatever you got to do to survive honorably while you're on the inside. Then when I got sentenced after being in over 21 months in MDCLA, they shipped me around a little bit, put me in the hole in a few other places waiting for my paperwork to come through, and then I got sent up to Oregon to a prison up there, and while I was up there, I was working out in the yard at least 5 days a week, and I rediscovered music totally by accident. I wasn't even into music. I knew how to play guitar. I'd played since I was 9. Took lessons from the time I was 9 till the time I was 15. Learned how to read, write music, finger picking, classical, the whole deal. But then I got out of it, got into motorcycles, and just picked up the guitar every once in a while, sometimes not for years. But it was in my head. The structure of music, the feeling, it was all there. So I don't know what happened, but after being up there for a few years, I was walking past this room where they did a lot of band rehearsals and the band program for inmates, and I just got inspired to start playing. And I joined a blues band, actually a blues rock band, and I said, you know, I'll come in, I'll play bass, guitar, I don't care. So they said, all right, come in and play bass. So I came in, the bass player hadn't gone home yet that I was replacing, so I played guitar, and they said, no, we want to keep you on the guitar. So I said, all right, you mind if I write some songs? They said, yes. So I wrote one song the next week, another song the next week, and I was writing new music every week. Then they had a riot up there, and they sent me to Texas. And when I got to Texas, I took a whole portfolio of my music with me, and 3 days after I got out of the hole up there, I was playing a concert in front of all the inmates. It was like 1,800 people in that yard. We were playing all my music, but that's because that was a blues, like a heavy blues. That's what I started writing was blues originally, kind of a blues rock, really, really heavily distorted. And then I gravitated towards down-tuned music while I was there. I did a lot of covers and my own music for quite a while, played it all the holidays. Then I think I wrote 32 songs over there. I've got all of them still, everything in the same paper I wrote it on. And I got so into it that I just decided when I get out, that's going to be my goal. I'm going to build a big band around good musicians, solid musicians, not a bar band, not a cover band, and it's just evolving into what I wanted it to be.
What would you say is your favorite Attica 7 song?
That's hard to say, but Devil's Daughter, Serial Killer, All or Nothing, Lockdown. I can keep going. That ended up being the whole damn album.
Yeah, I got to agree with you with that. I mean, there's not a bad song on the CD. But can you take us back to where you were physically and mentally when you wrote one of these songs and what was going through your mind there?
When I wrote Lockdown, I was in a cell. And if you listen to the lyrics in Lockdown, it's an inmate, and it's definitely a serious prison song. Another one, No Redemption, wearing a number on your chest, having eyes in the back of your head, because that was the thing. You always had a number on, and you had to have eyes in the back of your head all the time.
Do you feel that had you not went to prison, that you would be where you're at today musically?
If I didn't go to prison, Attica 7 wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be playing music. It completely changed my life when I went in there. I redirected my thinking, and I'm glad. I love the music. I love what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing with my business, building these fights. I love the music even more. And the TV, the different things that I'm into now, I mean, I'm enjoying it every day. That's one thing I can say is out of that experience, when I finally did get out, I appreciate every day. Even a bad day is a great day.
One of the things that I noticed that when I went out to cover the Uproar tour is after I saw your band, there was an it factor, a magic, a something that that people can relate to and forget about problems and stuff like that with your music. And I fully believe that people are going to jump into your genre from others and come together with your music. What do you feel is the reason for that?
I think one of the reasons that that our music is so universal, it's not just one little niche like metal or just rock or something else. It draws people from all different genres because there is a little blues influence in there. There's the rock influence, there's the metal influence, and every riff that's in there was written with feeling. I mean, when I write riffs for music, I don't just write riffs to write riffs. I write riffs that I feel, hooks that I feel, and it's got to really, like, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck kind of a thing. You know, it's like I know when I got those sweet spots in the groove, and that's what I incorporate into my choruses, into my verses, the breakdowns. I try to get the whole thing woven together so it's a feeling that you have. It's not just music. It's you feel the music, and that's important. You got to feel those hooks. That's what the hooks are, you know? And the same with the lyrics. When I write lyrics, 90% of the time, my choruses, into my verses, the breakdowns. I try to get the whole thing woven together so it's a feeling that you have. It's not just music. It's you feel the music, and that's important. You got to feel those hooks. That's what the hooks are, you know? And the same with the lyrics. When I write lyrics, 90% of the time, I write the lyrics after I've done all the riffs. the chorus, because everything, they fall together. But I start out with the first line. First line is always the hardest line when I write, because it sets the pace for everything to follow. And then it just starts flowing like water. And it's very, it's a little bit of poetry, but it always tells a story almost every time. I don't want to just write ridiculous sentences, you know, just to fill the void with vocals. You know, I want it to tell a story. If you wrote it as poetry or just as a story, it has a beginning and an end usually.
My photography and my video is I try to look at things as a voyeur in letting people see the world through my camera. I see that same thing in your music. I mean, people are able to come into where you were and experience that, or, you know, relate things to their lives. What's your trick to letting people see that?
Well, like in the song Serial Killer, I'm not a killer. I've never killed anybody. But just as when you're an actor, you know, you act, you kill people in the movie, that doesn't make you a killer. But you have to be into that part. You have to become that person. And when I wrote that song, I really had to get deep into the character of this serial killer that was telling the story in his lyrics. And if you listen to the lyrics in that song, that's what it is. This is a guy that, he's a killer. He doesn't necessarily want to be a killer. He can't help it. The demons take over. And he does what he does. It's not like he's looking for this to happen. It happens, and he tells it that as the story comes out. When you're listening to the song, it's very evident that he's almost a victim of himself.
Wow. See, and I think that's the magic that all your songs have is you let people see it from the real thing. I mean, the real deal. The you know, what's in the mind of a serial killer. I mean, who knows that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've been in some places, I've been around some people that were that kind of people, and it emanates out of some of them. It just emanates so bad. I mean, you can feel it before they even say anything. And then there's others that they're like multiple personality type of people. They would be the nicest people in the world, but the other side of them is the homicidal side that flips, and it's like they're the most dangerous ones because they're a chameleon, and you can never trust people like that. But I've been in situations with a lot of people that are that type of people, both those kind of killers, and to try to put your mind in that place is it takes a minute to get there. And if you want to write something that's believable with that feeling, you have to get your mind there. You have to be that person to do it.
That's a scary thing to attempt to get into a place like that and get out.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I remember specifically when I did that, and I remember the feeling I had, and it wasn't a good feeling, let me tell you. I wouldn't be proud to think like that on a daily basis, let me tell you.
Well, there's not too many writers that are going to be able to come up with the music that you have. And again, I think that's probably the biggest part of listening to your CD that's out right now, that it's just every song on there. I mean, I instantly bought the CD, and there's not a song on there I don't like.
We've got a really, really good team of players right now. Without even having a bunch of rehearsals under our belt, we can go out and play shows, and we did. And a lot of the time you take players, you're going to have to play at least 7, 8, 9 rehearsals together before they're actually tight enough to go out in public. We didn't even need to do that in this case.
Yeah, I saw you guys on your second show, and I was hooked right then and there. Like I said, I think I even really got in trouble because I didn't photograph any other bands but you guys. But it pretty much paid off. And I think the other thing I liked about Attica 7 is that it was so cool to see you guys after you perform. You're at the merch booth, and you're there till the time you guys leave. I mean, you were there with a solid line of fans taking pictures and signing autographs. And I mean, you, to me, that's a true rock star. I mean, you were passionate. It's like you guys, if you could afford it, would go out there and play for free, you know, just to play that music. I mean, that's kind of what I got from that.
Yeah, if it was just about the money, we would have quit doing this a long time ago. I would have quit way before I hooked up with the lineup that we have now. Money has nothing to do with it. And the fans, they're the most important, and we really appreciate it when we see these fans that come from 100 miles away or more to see the show, you know, see it in motels, and that's really true fans, and we're going to do everything we can to make that experience as good as we can for them. And when the show's over with, we're going to spend time with them, we're going to sign autographs, give them merch, you know, sell them merch, give them merch, everything. You know, we're going to make the experience as best we can for them.
It was funny watching you guys, you know, have fun with this, where you were throwing out the shot glasses and people were catching them as they're going by, and
yeah.
And you know, the parts that a lot of the fans don't get an opportunity to see, like the rock star life where you're living in truck stops and things like that. But and you even had on your tour manager Al. Wasn't there a couple of episodes with him where some funny things happened there with truck stop?
There's episodes of Al all the time. I have fun with him daily. He's great entertainment. Yeah, I left him at least one truck stop. I actually sent him out to check the rear tire one time, and while he was out there, I locked the door, drove off, and left him at the truck stop. Hey, Al, come up here, will you? What's up, Rusty? I think that rear tire's blown, man. Would you check that back, the tag axle?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, man, thanks.
Hey, shut that door when you get out, will you?
We're going to leave his ass again, man. I'm going to lock this door. Another time at another truck stop, he was outside doing whatever, fueling or something, and I took off, and he actually ran, jumped up on the mirror of the bumper and held onto the thing, so I couldn't get rid of that, so I had to stop and let him in. And I think at another venue, we were backing out, and I had him help back the bus out, and he was guiding me as soon as I got out and took off. And I heard I had the door open still while I was driving. It sounded like Fred Flintstone trying to catch the bus with those heavy feet. I said, damn, this guy can run, man. I had no clue he could run like that. I finally let him in that time, too. He deserved it. You know, he had to run quite a ways, you know. So,
you know, musically or through life in itself, if you could go back in time and change something, what would you change?
You know, it's funny because you say that, like, you know, I've thought about this many times. I would love to change the mistakes I made that sent me to prison. But then I think if I changed what sent me to prison last time, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be going in a whole nother direction. So I took a very bad experience that happened to me in 1999, and I turned it into a good thing. I took everything I had to work with, flipped it. And because of that, I'm so happy with everything I'm doing, I don't want to change that. And I would have to take that back, because there's really not much that I regret since I've been released. It's all been a pretty good trip.
Your bike building, I mean, this shop is, I mean, you're sitting in front of an $80,000 bike right there, and your bikes are amazing. Where's that going to go with Attica 7, you know, taking off?
You know, I look at what I have going on here like a triangle. It's like the devil's triangle. I've got Illusion, I've got the music, and I've got the TV. And it's all interlinked, and they all work for each other. So what one does pulls the other up, and they're all connected all the time. And I love it. It's a great cross-promotional type of a thing. Personal branding, fans, brand, bikes, brand, everything is doing well. So the better the music does, I think the better the bike business will do.
And the TV, Sons of Anarchy, that's a huge, huge show. I mean, how did that happen?
You know, it's that was luck. You know, Kurt Sutter's a great guy. I really like him. He started that show 5 years ago, and he's a smart guy. He went out and did his homework. He came by here. He's visited many Hell's Angels. He wanted to go to the top of the food chain and learn about clubs, and he did. And it's a drama. You know, it's not real, but it can't be real. If you're going to be entertaining, you have to be dramatic. You have to have a lot of that stuff going on. That's what people need to not lose focus of. You know, it's a fantasy, but it's great. You know, but he did a lot of work in reality so that he could have the most realistic of fantasies. So, and look at it. It's a cult following, man. The thing's crazy. It's over 5 million people regularly watching this. I'm honored to be part of it.
I've had the incredible fortune to travel with you guys on the road for, and what seems to be months, but it's only been, what, a couple weeks?
Yeah, with you, you wear on us a lot of dust. It seems like yours to me, you know what I mean?
I don't make too many mistakes, but the ones I do make are pretty big, so.
Oh, like leaving me in a truck stop? Yeah, that was a good one. At 4 a.m, I think it was?
Yeah, it was pretty cool,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I felt pretty bad.
I'm glad I had my phone with me. That's all I can say. Or you guys would have been all the way to L.A. before you seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going to put footage of that up there. So, but one of the things that I noticed is that everything that you do, whether you're driving a bus or orchestrating the band and in your organizational skills and your leadership skills and when we go places – like last night, the Rainbow, after you played at the Key Club, I mean, they closed the place down, but you and your few select friends were allowed to stay. Something about you is just, you know, people love. You know, what do you think that is?
I just try to treat everybody the way that I want to be treated. And I look at people, you know, and I give them the equal respect that they deserve. And there's so many people out there to feel entitled, to take. You know what I mean? I hate that. Nobody's entitled like that. You should treat everybody the way you want to be treated, because when somebody treats you bad with disrespect, you're not happy. And the people you treat bad feel the same way. It's no different. Nobody's entitled to treat anybody bad that doesn't deserve it, you know? So treat people the way they deserve to be treated, you know? And people will, they'll appreciate that. That's all. Just being fair, man. Consequences are the most important thing to think about. Everybody, if the action that you do, whether it be good or bad, always has consequences. If you do negative action, there's negative consequences. The bigger the action, the bigger the consequence. And those consequences don't go away. The action takes 2 seconds. We're all capable of all types of violence, all types of good, all types of bad. Anybody, I mean, from the smallest person, it doesn't matter your size. It matters your will to do it. And there's a lot of people out there, and they say, I don't care, I don't give a fuck. Well, you know what? You're going to care when you get nailed. You're going to care when you pay those consequences. Because all this stuff out here, if you've never done time, been locked away in cells for a long time, you have no idea the consequence. And the people that have done it and say, oh, it ain't shit, well, I don't even fuck those guys. Their opinion doesn't matter anyway. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. What's it like being in a little cell, solitary?
You know, you get used to it, I'm sad to say, but you have to. If you don't get used to it, you're not going to survive. You're going to go nuts. People are adaptable. You can do just about anything, and over time, somebody's going to be adapting to whatever it is. You know, whether it be torture. In this day and age, there's not physical torture, but they've refined mental torture to a fine art. And if you've got the government pissed off at you, they have many ways to mentally break you down. And they'll try, you know. And if you're strong, you won't be broke down, but you're not going to have a good time while they're trying.
Absolutely. Attica 7, it's www.attica7.com. We got some great stuff coming up in the future, you think, here?
Yeah, I'm real excited about what's going on right now. I don't want to get into the details because it hasn't happened yet, and it's not good to talk about things that haven't happened yet with certainty, but we've got some good things coming up in 2013. I think you guys will be seeing us in many places.
Okay, so right now your fans can get CD on your website.
They can go to our website. They can go to iTunes, Amazon. I think FYE or FYI, one of those stores, and Best Buy.
Best Buy?
Yeah.
All right. And merchandise, shirts, things like that?
We got shirts, CDs, hats, posters, and the stuff's growing. You know, it's kind of in the infancy right now.
Music videos on the coming up?
Yeah, we do have one music video for Serial Killer that's done right now. I don't know if we're going to re-edit it. It's a good video, but I want to have a great video. So we'll see what happens there. We have plans for a series of videos coming up here within the next 2 to 3 months.
Fantastic. All right. Well, the fans are going to be in for a treat. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to travel with you guys, and you are my ultimate favorite. I've listened to a lot of bands, been with a lot of bands, but when people ask me what was your favorite tour, I'm going to have to say Attica 7.
Right on, man. You want me to pay you now? I left my wallet.
Check would be fine.
My
wallet's
at home, sorry.
Actually, I was thinking about a new bike. I mean, that one behind you looks pretty
what?
Good. So. A new bike.
What?
Bike.
I can't hear what?
Motorcycle.
Huh? I can't hear. I've been playing so much, I can't hear.
That thing behind you lit up really
good?
Beautiful. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
My sights is messed up, too, man. I got to start getting a good rest.
All right.
I'm Rusty Coons with the band Attica 7, and you've been watching Rock Biz Magazine. Yeah.
Great. We're out. That's a wrap. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Thanks. It was Rusty, our friend Rusty, and check it out, Attica 7, www.
That was amazing.
Yeah, it was.
He's a very humble man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to speak before.
No, no worries. No worries. Yeah, Phil just texted me, which is rare, but
he knows how to do that?
Wife did it. I think his wife did it. He got hung up. I don't know if he's going to be here or not yet.
Okay. So is it just us two, or I don't know?
For right now.
Okay. No, like I said, that was just fantastic. He's very soft-spoken. You know, the funny thing is about him that is just so humble because he's genuine, for one. He's family-orientated, and he's not about me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's, like I said, I don't know everything about him, but you know how sometimes you can just meet someone and they just rub you the wrong way? He is completely opposite. I mean, I've never met him face-to-face, but on the show here, I have spoken with him on the phone, and just very humble. Very humble. He's very he's focused. He knows what he wants, what he doesn't want, but he knows what he wants to be around. Where others, they flock to him, if it makes sense, because he has a purpose. He's showing a purpose, and not everybody understands how to get their own purpose. And it's almost like they want to watch him to get a feel for what to do. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. I'm hoping if they ever got here, it would be cool. I did offer for, you know, him and his wife a long time ago, you know. But like I said, it's amazing how sometimes you can just talk to somebody and you just feel very comfortable. You don't feel, oh, my God. Or, you know, I've been around some really tall men. You know, to other men, it's very intimidating, you know. And to me, it's just like, holy crap. Midget style.
I see pictures of me with him and a few other people, or just the two of us, or maybe a third person.
It's always put the little guy in the middle. And I'm not a little guy. I'm 5'9".
Yeah, I was going to say, you're like 5'9 or 5'10, aren't you? Yeah. Well, imagine if you were my height at 5'2". Then they'd really razz. And they'd really call you the shorty. But, you know, like I said, it was just an amazing interview. I didn't know how, you know, to hear it before. I can't recall if it was something, maybe that you said where to go or something to hear it, or, you know, he had an interview or something, but, you know, it was just very impressive, very impressive. You know, it's actually funny because I think if I ever had the chance to meet him, I would feel like speaking with yours and my mutual friend from there, you know what I mean? Just very comfortable and, you know, not anything to worry about, you know what I mean? But in California, you guys have a different slang than what we do here in Chicago. You know, it's like, I always laugh when somebody's like, right on, or kicking it, and I'm like, where are you kicking? You know, and it's like, right on. Didn't that come out in the 60s? Did it leave in the 70s? You know?
Well, you know, sometimes this is what happens.
You can't handle the truth!
Okay.
Yeah. And then other times when you watch the news, this happens.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Okay.
I want
Here
you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
That's good. I like it.
Me too.
Oh.
But,
you
no, then,
little pipsqueak.
Yeah, and then onto a bigger note. This somebody asked me to replay this one too, so I'm going to do that right now and get it out of the way.
Okay.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks. It's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interests. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club. You ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
It's true.
You know, hearing that reminds me of Bill, and he always says that, nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care.
That's true, because you know why? We don't have a freedom of choice sometimes. Here, listen
no.
to this.
Well, if you do have a draft, it would be interesting for a change to at least for 10 years have a rich kid's draft. See, I don't understand how people... How working guys, you know, these guys who think of themselves as real men, and Democrats are demonized for drinking wine and eating quiche and all this, and this makes them less than men. I don't understand how these guys can admire a man who doesn't understand hard work, wasn't ready. You know, he walks around. Here's a guy who swaggers around with his hands out like
yes.
this, like he's a gunfighter.
Yeah.
And that's fine if you're ready for a fight. He's not ready for a fight. He's ready for your kids to go and fight.
When you say you want rich people to go fight for you, are you talking about people like the Dixie Chicks? I mean,
no.
They're rich. I don't
yeah.
see them signing
I'm talking
you.
About the fact that a war is old men protecting their property by sending young men, or rich old men protecting their property by sending middle class and lower class young men off to die. It always has been. It's all about owning things. All of this back and forth and debate implies that there are really choices in this country, that we really have choices, freedom of choice.
Well,
it's an illusion.
Army.
Americans are made, and they're having trouble filling the slots in this all-voluntary army. I wonder why. Let me say one thing about choice. There is no real choice. They say freedom of choice. You're given an illusion of choice. Americans are meant to feel free by the exercise of meaningless choices. You don't have, you know what
right.
the choices are in this country? Paper or plastic? A tile or window? Smoking or non-smoking? Those are your real choices. You don't get
right.
to choose anything.
It's true.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, they came up with some shit the other day. And this was sent to me by a couple of vets that I know. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the link in the chat room now. But it says, U.S. is shamefully slow to help the vets.
But it's true.
I know it is.
You know, they sit there and they drag their heels and trying to help military men and women. You know, whatever the thing is, whatever's going on, they drag their heels. I mean, they're just slow as hell. It's almost like,
well,
you know, it would be better off if they could go to a county hospital. They would be seen faster than what they do if they go through the VA. Sorry to say.
Well, let me tell you this. Veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan facing post-traumatic stress disorder and other injuries can face wait times in the processing their disability benefits of up to 600 days. 600 days, that's like a little more than a year and a half.
Yeah, and on regular disability, you got 180 days.
Well, here.
Big difference.
Imagine you served for 1 year with the U.S. Army in Iraq. Imagine you served an additional tour in Afghanistan a year later. And imagine being injured in the last tour after a roadside bomb exploded from beneath a trash can as your Humvee rolled by. Your buddy sitting next to you was killed, and after you left the Army and returned home, you had trouble focusing. You had headaches and issues with your vision. You realized you returned with what might be traumatic brain injury, and maybe post-traumatic stress disorder, too. Imagine you also have two kids, younger than seven, who haven't seen very much for the last half decade. Imagine you're starting to find a job. You've got a lot on your plate, and you're understandably stressed. You don't want to let down your family, and you don't want to be viewed as weak or wimp by your buddies. You summon the courage to overcome the stigma, and you go to your local Department of Veterans Affairs to get some help. You file a claim for disability benefits and compensation you've earned in the support to keep your family afloat financially. You're hopeful. Now imagine waiting 600 days before you get an answer from the Department of Veterans Affairs. 600 days of staring at your mailbox, 600 days of phone calls to check in, 600 days of bills piling up, 600 days of disappointment. Sounds crazy, right? Well, for thousands of veterans nationwide, it's real life. If you're a young veteran, file a claim with the Department of Veterans Affairs in New York or Los Angeles. You can average wait of 600 days, and you're not alone. More than 900,000 veterans of all generations are stuck in bureaucratic logjam that in 2013... it's almost too absurd to believe. After 10 years of war, three VA secretaries, and an increase in the overall department budget of 40% in 2009, an incredible 97% of veterans' claims are still on paper. Yep, on paper. Why should vets receive benefits? Pentagon offers high honor for drone ops American, or high honor for drone ops America's soldiers in Nevada piloting drones remotely that can strike a target 1,000 miles. And two continents away, but 97% of our veterans' benefits claims are still on paper. Earlier this month, the Center for Investigative Reporting leaked an internal VA document that showed the entire world what veterans nationwide have known for years. The VA backlog problem is even worse than reported. The VA has reported an average claim wait time is 272 days. For the first claim filed, it's longer at 316 and 327 days. In Los Angeles, that figure in days is 619. In New York, it's 642. In Indianapolis, it's 612 days. And vets with first-time claims in Reno, Nevada, wait 681 days. The VA has testified it has hired 3,300 new claims processors, but has failed to report that because of staff turnover, the net increase in processes is only 300 since 2012. And in Chicago, Waco, Texas, and Oakland, California, the overall number of claim processes have gone down. Since your internal documents were leaked last week, we've yet to see a public response from VA Secretary Eric Sieninski or from the Commander-in-Chief. Some 2.6 million men and women answered the call to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan. But now, a decade later, President Obama is not answering calls for help, and the public still doesn't seem to get it. That's why this week I'm joining veterans from across America as we take our stories to Washington. Why invading Iraq was a terrible mistake. Veteran leaders from 22 states are converging on the Capitol to storm the Hill, where it will be pressing elected officials to confront and solve the backlog. You can see their faces and read about their stories at Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America website. I'll put that up in the chat.
See, that's what bothers me a lot, you know.
Well,
Anybody in the military, I'm sorry.
Well, they are an amazing group of women, men and women, and one dog that have overcome tremendous obstacles, and now they're taking on another one, the VA backlog. Just like we've been trained, we won't quit until the job is done, no matter how long it takes. We'll keep fighting. Our brothers and sisters deserve the support from their sacrifices, and every single American should stand with us to end the VA backlog once and for all. 10 years after the start of the Iraq War, there's a lot of folks who say they support the troops. Now is the time for them to show it. That's true, too.
Yeah. But the saddest thing is these men and women earned it with whatever they came back with, okay? And the saddest thing is many that I know or that I talk to, they don't want to go through that red tape. They know how hard it is. They know how long the wait is. But it still is very frustrating because they know what they feel they're entitled to, but it's that wait and wait. Paperwork upon paperwork upon paperwork, phone calls, whatever. That's not helping them. And a lot of them are becoming homeless, you know. And any time they think, okay, well, here's a different option you can go to, you know, go to this agency or whatever, they'll help you. And then when they get there, they get so frustrated, you know, because it's more red tape. How many hoops do these men and women have to go through to get help?
A lot.
Exactly. And for what?
I know the last time
easier to go to a county hospital. If they don't have insurance and they go to a county hospital, they're not... A county hospital doesn't have their military file to know what they've gone through. You know what I mean?
But it's just stabilizing them on their way.
Yeah. And for what? They served the country for what? For this? To get treated this way? By the same government that they thought they felt that they were standing up for?
Well, the VA just halted further clinic leases. Future care to be determined. But a federal law requires the Department of Veterans Affairs to obtain congressional approval for a commercial lease of a future VA medical facility if the estimated first-year lease cost exceeds $1 million. This policy has been in place for more than a decade. Dozens of leases for VA operated community-based outpatient clinics have been approved under this procedure. Using the leasing authority rather than constructing VA-owned facilities allows VA to quickly establish convenient primary care facilities for veterans in communities where they live. Veterans who use these community clinics report high satisfaction with their care and the convenience they offer. In 2012, in evaluating 15 proposed VA leases that each exceed the $1 million threshold, the Congressional Budget Office concluded that congressional rules require that the funds go to offset the entire 20-year prospective lease costs would not be included in either the VA budget or would be taken from funding of ongoing veteran programs, all in the first year of each lease. The budget office indicated this policy would apply to renewals for existing VA leases. The budget office decision multiplied the VA's cost for these proposed 15 leases by 20-fold for a total need of $1.2 to $1.5 billion in fiscal year 2013. This fund of this magnitude cannot be diverted from other VA accounts for this surprising new requirement and aren't covered in the budget request that has been submitted to Congress. These 15 leases were dropped from further congressional consideration last year. In the VA's current planning, including 15 new community-based out clinics located in California, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Kansas, Louisiana is going to get 2 sites. Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, Puerto Rico, Texas is going to get 2 sites. South Carolina. VA also projects a need to lease or renew existing leases for 23 more community-based care facilities through 2017 to provide care for more than 340,000 veterans across 22 states and U.S. territories. Unless the budget office changes the policy or Congress acts to overturn the budget office decision with legislation or makes a change in House rules and current funding policy, most, if not all, of these leases are in jeopardy. Veterans consequently will be denied access to VA health care in these locations. So there's a... they're fucked.
Right. No matter what they try to do, no matter what avenues they go to, it's the wait, it's a disappointment, it's, you know, they get so frustrated, they don't know what to do.
Well, the VA would be forced to buy land and construct government-owned clinics, or more likely will require veterans who need VA care to travel longer distances to receive it. VA-built clinics would be more expensive, would take much longer to approve and activate, and would reduce veterans' flexibility to place and move facilities based on the changing needs of the veteran population. Forcing veterans to unnecessarily travel for care would increase the inconvenience and add to additional costs. As always, the Department of or Disabled American Vets appreciates the advocacy and the Disabled Veteran Commanders Action Network. So,
well, like I said, I just find it so disappointing where, you know, the men and women, they believe they're going to do something they feel to help, okay? And then they come back and they get treated like shit. And then people wonder, why are they so angry? Why are they so hostile? Well, wake up. They weren't sitting there asking to, you know, come home to a parade, but they can't even get the right benefits. They can't get anything right away because it's so much red tape.
Uh-huh.
And a shame on the government. These men and women put their lives on the line. And this is how they get treated.
Let me tell you, I still have to wait anywhere from 90 to 120 days before I get to go see my doctor there.
Yeah, how crazy is that? It's insane. You know, and then if they're dealing with nightmares, post-traumatic stress disorder, whatever the case may be, and then if they start to become suicidal, then it becomes a whole different issue. You know, then it's like, well, they're trained to do this. There's nothing we can do to help them. What do you mean? How much more does somebody have to have a cry for help before somebody actually helps them? And how often do you see suicides?
I got news for you. There was a suicide the other day on the ship. I don't know if you remember. I told you about that shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. They determined it was suicide. Still trying to figure out how the fuck you could shoot yourself in the back of the head twice, but, you know.
But you understand what I'm saying, you know, and it just makes you sick. It makes you sick thinking, this is what you did. This is what you fought for. You were proud of yourself. You came home. You got treated like shit. Not only by society, by a lot of people in society. I can't say everyone, you know. And then the worst part of it, you have to sit there and wait so long for any kind of benefits. And that's what's so appalling. They didn't wait when they went to go sign up. They didn't wait to go to boot camp. They didn't wait to go on the front line or wherever they were positioned at. But they came home and they still have to wait. And they become homeless. Then they become vagrants. And then people don't understand why there's so many homeless vets. Because they don't care. Nobody cared when they came home.
Well, it's like I always say, never forget America's wounded heroes.
Yeah.
House again?
What?
You walking around the house again?
No, I'm sitting. Is the TV bothering you? I could turn it down.
Well, it might be a good idea.
Okay. Do you want a Jonathan update? Or no?
Yeah.
Okay. They saw a surgeon yesterday. And...
Firstly, who Jonathan is?
Oh, I'm sorry. Jonathan is my grandson. He was born with cranial stenosis, and surgery has to correct what the deformity he has on his head and his face. It is looked at as a premature fusion of the skull while inside the womb, meaning... When he came out, he doesn't have a soft spot. His head is disshaped. His face is disshaped as well. And it takes surgery to correct it, so that way he has room for his brain to grow as he is getting bigger. Right now, there is pressure on the one side of the head. You can tell, like, the brain is trying to come to one side of the head. They did see the surgeons yesterday. Now, before, not tomorrow, but the following Friday, we'll know an exact surgery date. Prior to surgery. They have to go in for a genetics test. They want to test in genetics and see if it is anything like on my daughter's side or if it's on the father's side. And that will also determine what if my daughter has any more children, if she were to.
Mm-hmm.
It will determine if... other babies will be born the same way. And then with the blood transfusions that he's going to require, there's three people so far on his father's side of the family that are his, that can donate. But what they have to do is they will take a vial of blood from the three of them. If the components in their blood does not match his 100%, they will not be able to donate, period. And they will have to use what they call here, I don't know if it's anywhere else, you know, throughout the states, but here it's called life source, and that's what the surgeon, who the surgeons deal with in cases like this. Now, they want her, my daughter, to be fully ready for the surgery, meaning once they get a date set, he has to be admitted into the hospital the day before surgery. So what they are asking for my daughter to bring any sound toys that are familiar to him, anything music sound, voice recognition, because after surgery he's going to be very swollen and his eyes are going to be swollen shut for several days, so he's not going to be able to see until when the swelling starts to subside. And they had to inform her of the risks and the surgery, hemorrhaging, staph infections, any other kind of infections. You know, she has to be fully aware of what could take place. She did ask the surgeon, surgeons in regards to if they have ever lost a patient. And in 10 years, they have not lost one. But, you know, they're looking at him not to have a special needs issue after surgery, but unfortunately, he's not going to be in the right developmental age to see, you know, so that will come in time to see what's what. So she did see the 3D aspect of the CAT scan, which looks different than what you saw on the page I made for him with the black and white scan copy of. And it kind of took her there. It kind of took her because it's a different reality when you see it in the 3D version. But she is very confident in the surgeons in regards to, you know, their work. The main one that she saw on Wednesday, he's got 40 years behind him.
Uh-huh.
So that's a plus. You know, so we know the one surgeon will accept the insurance. We don't know about the one she just saw on Wednesday yet, not until next week. Because in full surgery, she has to deal with his assistant, you know, so they can get the scheduling, everything set up for the genetics and everything else long prior to the surgery. So
wow.
That's where we stand right now.
Uh-huh.
But they're not sure if he'll need like a physical therapy type thing because the way his brain is going towards the left, he's favoring the left side of the head more than the right. Not that he can't turn his head to the right or, you know, anything like that, but he favors the left side a lot. And so they're not sure where that'll stand. They don't know if, like, right after surgery, you know, if how they have to reconstruct the front of the skull and his face, if everything will just fall into place and he'll be okay. They don't know yet. Every case is different. So he definitely has a very long road ahead of him.
Yeah. And tough.
Yeah. Years. Well, we're hoping that the first surgery that he has will be the only one. They won't have to go back in and, like, you know, they're hoping that the metal won't space between the metal and the back part of the skull. You know what I mean? Because if that happens, if it doesn't come together right, I'll have to go back in. So.
Where can people find out about him?
What?
Where can people find out about him?
Oh, I made a page for my grandson, my daughter, on Facebook. It is Jonathan's with... well, it's got the two commas and the S because I was making this page at 4 in the morning. Jonathan's Journey. It is an open page. It is like a community-type page. It's for information if people are not aware what cranial stenosis is. It shows on videos on that page what it is, what they do. I cannot post the videos of what the actual surgeries look like. My daughter is not ready to handle it at this moment. I did post in there the doctors that will be on the team to do the surgery with him, and I just posted today in regards to the blood bank that they use in case if people we know if their blood does not match his.
Because so if somebody wants to donate, there's all kinds of information.
There is the PayPal information on the page as well as a GoFundMe account information on the page as well.
All right. Say hello to hello, Eunice.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Eunice.
How you doing? Hey.
Good.
Not
how
bad.
You doing?
How are you?
Good. Good.
Hey, didn't ignore you. I just turned off my phone. I had some stuff going on.
What's going on?
No, I can't tell you what's going on, but I...
Oh, okay.
I didn't call you back because I had some stuff going on, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll take care of that in the morning.
Oh, good. Good.
Real quick, I'm not sure how you feel about it. We can, if you want to post his page in the chat room. I don't know who's here because I'm not logged into the chat room.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I tried to get on Facebook again. You would not believe that I worked on it from 11 o'clock last night. And I finally got a new password. Now they want me to put all my friends in. You know, I'm saying, I don't even remember their names. What the hell are you talking about? You know, I'm telling you, what a mess. But I'm trying to get on it, guys.
Okay.
So, you know, I just don't know why they can't just pull up my old thing, you know, and put my picture on. But I went and had a new do done.
That's for you.
I am now a light brown. And I'll have streaks put in it, but they have to wait a week to do the process. And we got good news. Am I interrupting you, Nora? Finish what you were saying. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay because, you know, like I said, but I'm leaving that up to him if he wants to put this in the chat, even though it's on his blog. You know, it's up to him because I don't know who's with us tonight because I'm not logged in.
Oh, okay.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I get a call from the senator. Phil already heard this yesterday, and I have to go before the Judiciary Committee May 7th, and we're going to have a big rally in front of Boston, the State House, first, and then the thing starts at 1 o'clock inside the State House, and... So that's good news because now it will go back to the Senate, then to the House, and back to the Senate, and then on the governor's desk. So we hope that's going to happen by the last week of May, the first week in June, that the bill will be passed. And one of the great things is the statute of limitations was for 3 years, and when we got half the loaf, we brought it up to 27 years, but now they brought it up to 55. Anybody under 55 can still file a claim, you know. So that's one good thing, and the other changes were pretty good too. So, really excited about that.
Up in the chat room, Nora.
I'm sorry, what?
I put that up in the chat room for you.
Okay, thank you. We're trying to get the word out as much as possible, whether if anyone donates or not, but more so, too, for information, you know, because I never heard of it until when my grandson was born. I thought,
right.
Oh, my God, what is this? But the surgery alone is just hideous. They have to do, but there's an amazing side to it, you know, with all the different technology out there. It's amazing that they can reconstruct half a skull in the face and you wouldn't even know that they were born different.
That's good. Yeah.
That's
so good. That's so good, Nora. Really is. And then I found out bad news, as Phil heard last night. You know, Philin, that's like being raped all over again. Do you know that?
Uh-huh.
Because like I said, you can't pick them. You can't pick them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pick a pedophile.
No.
And this is a real crushing thing that we talked about last night. And as you notice, I didn't make any comments.
Uh-huh.
I haven't talked about it because I just can't right now. I just can't. I have to see what's going on. A friend of mine was accused of doing what I'm fighting for, you know.
Yeah.
And he's a representative of the State House. So, I mean, it's like, you know, and I told him as earlier when I talked to him earlier, you know, I just can't make any comments on it right now.
Uh-huh.
We'll just see what they come up with. So, I don't know. One good hand washes another. And I did get good information from my daughter, Deanne, who I had to really kind of cut out everything, you know, not to enable her or anything anymore. And she's going back to work. That is so good for her. She needs that. And she'll be helping the elderly, which is very good. And she's going to be going out on her own. So that scumbag is going to have to find a way to live by himself, you know.
Yeah.
So all I can do is sit back and watch.
And wait.
And wait and see if she really does this. And if she does, then we'll be willing to help her, you know.
Uh-huh.
So good things are happening, you know.
Good.
That's a good thing. Good things are happening. So, but I'm making myself beautiful because if I come to California, I got to be young looking, right?
Uh-huh.
I think I'll have to have a
boot.
Huh?
No, I'm not going there.
You're not going there? Well, it gives me a chance to have a boob job and all that stuff.
Okay, you do what you
got
to do.
Are you eating something, Phil?
Yes, he is.
I got the munchies.
Well,
you
shit.
Know, that's what happens when he smokes cigarettes, you know. He gets hungry and then he has to eat. And that's what makes him a little chunky butt.
Hey, Nora, you know, sometimes that cotton you put in your ears?
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to put it in your mouth.
You know what? You know, I'm not even done with you after what you put on my wall, you know,
hey,
yesterday. So don't even start.
Go there with this.
But, you know, there was another... Let me get on my computer.
Right.
You guys just keep talking.
That's okay.
No, keep talking.
So
I'm only a click away.
Just relax. Breathe. I mean no harm. You know, I'm actually in a good mood for a change instead of, like, a little bitchy ass.
Come on, computer, get up here. Okay. There was some stupid question they asked me on...
Turn your thumb down.
I'm going to shut it off. Wait a minute. All right, I shut it off.
Yeah, I'm going to say, turn the sound down.
Oh, I shut it off.
Okay, good.
Hold on one second. Hold on.
Okay.
I got a call.
I'm sorry. I was just razzing you.
Oh, I know, but sometimes that does need to go on here.
How was your weather today? Can you please rub that in?
It was in the high 60s, sunny. Light breeze off the ocean when I came off the ship.
Is that ever like a cool breeze for you? I've never seen the ocean or been near the ocean, so I don't know like if you get a cool breeze from the ocean or if it's kind of like a warm breeze, you know what I mean?
It's always a cool breeze.
Okay. So, like, a lot of times, if you're running a coastline,
You know the sad part about that, Nora?
What?
Can I tell you about what goes on here and stuff?
Yeah.
The truth can't handle the truth.
No, I can't.
I know.
You're right. Well, like I said, the only biggest water I've been around is Lake Michigan, and that's like nasty.
I used to, when I was a kid, fish off Navy Pier.
Well, back then, it used to be fine.
He was the captain on the fireboat there parked on the side.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go on the east side, or you just went in a different location?
What's that?
To the lake to go fish.
Oh, no, we went right off Navy Pier. Right out there at the end of Navy Pier by the water.
Right. Oh, see, that was amazing when it was the older part of Navy Pier. You know what I mean? Before they did it all and everything. Because I think, you were still here when they, you know, every summer when they started to do the festivals and they would have, like, the Loop and WMET and stuff like that. They'd have bands. Did you ever go there for that stuff?
Chicago Fest?
Yeah.
Never been to one. I was gone.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. That is unbelievable. I mean, I used to go. Like,
same thing I went to once. Based in Chicago. That was it.
Oh, I never went there. But when they used to have the Chicago Fest at Navy Pier, you know, so at the time I was in high school. And where my location was at the time, my girlfriend I grew up with. Huh?
You're old.
And she's on my Facebook page. She's one of the few that I have known for 48 years, you know. But anyways, we'd have to train to take it downtown, you know. But we would have a blast, and you'd see all the different bands, you know, like the Knack when they were big at the and stuff, you know. It was cool.
Well, when we used to go downtown, we used to jump up on the tracks and climb up through the trestles.
Yeah.
Train stopped. We walked in the back door.
Oh, well, see, now I grew up by a trestle, but we couldn't access the train on there because it was more the freight trains than the commuter, you know. And we used to cross the trestle to get from one side down to the other, you know. It was faster. One time we were at the Chicago Fest, and we went to the WMET stand to get a free shirt, you know. And then we went over to the Loop area where Gary Myers and Steve Dahl were jockeys at the time, you know. And it was so funny because as they were live on air, it was like they spotted her and I as we had the other radio station's tank tops on, you know. And they got off the podium, they came up to us, and they're like, we will give you a free Loop shirt if we can rip those off from you. I said, no, you can't rip it off me, but I'll go change and you can do it, you know. And so they gave me a Loop shirt, and I still wear it today. In fact, I wore it yesterday. And it was so funny because when I handed it to them, she didn't. And they went, brought me up on the podium with them. They ripped it in front of the crowd, you know, and it was cool. And I got 6 free concert tickets. It was wicked. It was fun. You know what I mean? And then we'd have to leave by a certain time because the commuter train's running south. You know, we'd have to go and jump the gates again and get in the train and go back home. That was the most illegal thing I ever did. We'd jump the gates and go hop a train.
The time we used to jump the gates, we got caught. So we just said, fuck it, and we started climbing up the trestles.
Yeah, well, like I said, where the station was in Riverdale, they didn't have a trestle that you could climb up and do things. But it was all right. It was fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was long before the computers in homes and cell phones. That's when we knew how to keep busy with our time. No, kids today have no clue.
Yeah, we were downtown, and I ran into one of my teachers, and he called my parents and told them that I was downtown.
What is the odds of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we had the elevator doors open. We were getting out of the elevator, and he's standing there looking at us.
It's like busted, you know, and it's like, what do? You can't say, oh, it wasn't me. God. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What else
I have to say something really funny.
Wait, how is this little, what's he doing? How's he end? Is he just, you said something about he's got teeth coming now?
Oh, yeah, there's about 5 or 6 teeth coming in on the bottom. And he is in full swing of teething. In fact, my son had brought me a couple boxes of Girl Scout cookies, okay? And he knows I like the shortbread ones. So yesterday, you know, he was just like, he gnaws on his hands, you know, and stuff, and he's almost to the point to where he can put his whole entire fist in his mouth. I'm like, oh boy, we have to change this. You know? And so I went and I grabbed a shortbread cookie, you know, to hold on to one end, just so he can lick it, you know what I mean? And he just loved that so much, and it was funny. My daughter had cans. Mom, and it's like, what? He's quiet. He's fine. It's not going to hurt him. And so it's keeping him busy. His gums are sore, you know. And so he's just munching away on that cookie like nobody's business, had it all over his face and his hands, and he was happy. And she took it away. He started screaming. And I told him, I said, bad mommy. She took your cookie, you know. But, she actually has a certain teether ring now that he uses on and off. But, you know, but like I said, it's, it was funny because she posted him. When did she, like, when he was 3 months old, and when she had posted up that he was teething like at 3 months, and Stacy was, no, that's too early. Oh, no, he's an early baby. In fact, when you hold him, like, on your lap, he sits himself up.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, can you just slow down and just be a baby? Enjoy being a baby. Let's not get out of hand here and grow up so fast. Take your time. Enjoy it. So, but,
that's
you know.
The time of your life, huh? You know why?
Why?
You three hots and a cot, somebody wipes your ass, and you don't have a care in the world.
True.
So what else is up?
Let's see. Oh, did you know that there's a dentist in Oklahoma that he has a total of 7,000 patients, okay? And out of these 7,000 patients, they have to be treated or tested for HIV and AIDS. Same
wow.
thing. Because of how he wasn't keeping his equipment clean. Do you know how many pissed off people are out there? but, it does.
I'm going to take a break here real quick. This is I'm the Darkness by Mike P.
Okay.
I am the darkness.
Mike P, the big homie, and that song was on The Devil's Ride, which, you know, he's in the East Coast right now on his tours.
Yeah, he's already starting the tour.
Going to kick it off in Poughkeepsie, New York.
How do you pronounce that?
Poughkeepsie.
Okay. I was going to try, but I thought, oh, I'm going to sound like an idiot.
It's Poughkeepsie, Poughkeepsie. So I don't know what happened to Eunice.
She had a phone call.
Okay. She's still on the air, though. Must put on hold.
I think she might have put you on hold. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyhow. There's just so much that needs to change. For a military, for having some kind of rights and stuff, everything's just gone. Everything's just gone.
You know, I went over, I got 2 million, this is from the first of the year, 2,010,639 people have looked at the blog.
Wow.
This week alone, 282,095.
Oof, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people.
Well, we're at 42 countries now.
Didn't we used to be at 48?
Yeah, but right now, today, we're at 42.
Okay. Yeah, I know it changes, you know. But like I said, I wasn't sure, and that's why I asked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. today, our weather was 50. It was t-shirt jeans weather. I know 50 is cold for you. Saturday is supposed to be 60, or in the 60s. Woo-hoo.
Uh-huh.
And then we're supposed to drop into the upper 30s. Crazy weather. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, if units don't come back in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to cut this short because I got a long day tomorrow.
Yeah, you're still on that long shift, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, are any new events or anything coming up? Or?
Not this weekend because of Easter, but...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's, I'll talk about all those Tuesday.
Okay, that's fine.
But,
I wasn't sure if I could ask that or not. That's why I figured, okay, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and Bill's guy on the move, he didn't call in tonight yet.
That's okay, you know. But he does great in regards to, you know, keeping everything updated and stuff, you know. So a great, great thing for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Being the eyes.
So, well, I'm thinking, I'm going to let Mike P's Summertime, Bill's favorite song.
Take us out?
Yep.
Yep. Well, sorry I was a few minutes late, but great show. Great interview that you played. he's going to go many, many, many places. Well, and so is Mike P. You know, they're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, with their music.
The one I'm going to play right now, it's Summertime in SFV. And,
okay.
I'll let this take us out. Talk to everybody Tuesday. Thanks for tuning in.
Have a great night.
All right. See you later.
Happy Easter.
Mike P, the big homie. Summertime in the valley, homie. Yeah. Come on.
C-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time. Yeah. Summertime in the SFV. Something for my 818 home. Me. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time. Yeah. Summertime in the SFV. Something for my 818 home. Me. It's summertime in the valley, baby. Summertime in the valley, it's summertime in the valley, baby. It's summertime. homie, throw away the cap. Cause where we going, man, we don't need that. All we need is a 30 pack, a pack of Jimmy straps, pack of hood rats, and a pad to kick it at. I think I'll call Slim, see what's up with him. If I can throw some hoes in the pool again, when it comes to having fun, I'm a motherfucking addict. Once again, I'm back at it, baby mama, too dramatic. And goddamn it, it's about that time. Then drink up the vodka, beer, and wine. Not even Friday night, drunk for the 10th time. So what the fuck? I guess I'll bust another rhyme. Cause hey, all I wanna do is drink beer and screw, hang on the avenue and go home with you when the party ends. Mike P back again with rep, but representing. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 home, me. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 home, me. Summer's Mike P, and it's likely that you just might be my new white tee. Hey, I'm just playing. Tell me, baby girl, hey, are you leaving or staying? There's a pool party going on, I'm all jumping. Kick back for a second, bring a couple of friends. I don't know the type of cribs that you been in, but my backyard look like a fucking Caribbean. Waterfalls, waterfalls, let's slip, let's slide. Jump in the pool, act a fool. I'm way too cool, call me GQ Smooth. It's a player's holiday, so it's time to celebrate. Got chicken on the grill, put some beer and steak. The feeling so great in the 818. It's a summertime breeze for the summertime G's and the summertime ladies with the double double D. V-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 home, me. V-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 home, me.
Yeah, this next verse right here goes out to everybody cruising Lower Canyon, homie. In 1999, 2000. Yeah, this one's for you, straight up.
In the town of 818 of the LA counties, there's a place that we roll in the San Fernando Valley. A little boulevard that's called Lower Canyon, where all the chicken heads go when it's time for landing. Hit the street looking clean, rolling these up on a Cadillac. Bumping too short like a big motherfucking Mac. Take a sip of yak just to get right. Holla at some hoes at the next red light. From Fox Avenue all the way to Brand. Turn around and come back to the three wheel stand. 64, watch it jump, hydraulic in the trunk. Turn my bass up and watch a 12-inch bump. Can't fuck with my ride, homie, don't try. Fucking with my senses like suicide. Back to them hoes, little lady, what's your name? She rolling way hard in a blue Ford Range. She said, what's your name? I said, I might be the lady of the night. Is what you might be. She said, I heard of you, you a player, right? Don't get mad at me, girl, cause I keep my game tight. She gave up the number with no fuss and fight. I'll be up in that ass later on tonight. Jump back in my ride, swerve away from the curb. Back on the boulevard for another chick to serve. Not even 8 o'clock, already got six numbers. I can tell right now, it's gonna be a great time.